Hello and welcome to this podcast, which covers the discussions at the April meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board. That meeting was held in London on the 19th to the 21st of April 2016. My name is Kristina Reitan and I'm part of the External Affairs team here at the IFRS Foundation. I'm joined by Stephen Cooper, who is one of the board members, and Hugh Shields, who is Executive Technical Director. And we will talk through some of the discussions and decisions that were taken at the April meeting. But before I start, we would like to just mention that the views shared in this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily represent those of the board. There were quite a lot of topics discussed at the April meeting. Hugh, do you want to start by touching on the agenda consultation?
Yes. The board considered a number of papers in relation to the 2015 agenda consultation, although I should point out no decisions were made, and these discussions will continue in the May board meeting. First of all, the board considered the effect that the feedback that we received in response to the request for views should have on the overall future work plan. The board also considered the feedback that we received from investors on the consultation, including an online survey that was conducted as part of the consultation. The board also received a general update on the board's research activities in the context of the agenda consultation. And then there were a number of specific project updates, those being pollutant pricing mechanisms, rate-regulated activities, as well as feedback on discount rates, primary financial statements, IAS 37, our standard on provisions, contingent liabilities and contingent assets, and also an IFRS 5, our standard on non-current assets held for sale and discontinued operations. In addition to this, the board also discussed an analysis of suggestions that we received for a number of new projects, and the board identified some particular projects for further consideration next month. And without listing out all of them, they included IFRS reporting by subsidiaries, general principles for separate financial statements, general principles for combined financial statements, variable in consideration and contingent consideration for asset purchases, and risk sharing and collaborative arrangements. And further details on these projects are in the agenda paper, and again, these discussions will be continued in May. And with that, I'll pass to Steve to talk about insurance and IFRS 9.
Okay, thanks, Hugh. This is the interaction between insurance and IFRS 9, so not the main insurance project to issue a revised insurance standard. The board continued its redeliberations of the exposure draft that we published, and in this session we discussed both the overlay approach and the temporary exemption from applying IFRS 9, some people refer to as the deferral approach. With regard to the overlay approach, the board has essentially reconfirmed the use of this approach, which will be where the entity is permitted to designate certain assets that relate to contracts within the scope of IFRS 4. And those assets which it designates are those that are measured at fair value through profit and loss by applying IFRS 9, but that would not have been measured at fair value through profit and loss in its entirety if applying IAS 39. So this is a situation where an entity is faced with having additional items being at fair value through P&L if it applies IFRS 9, but of course is in a position of not yet applying the new insurance contract standard. So the idea is to have this overlay adjustment, which would then remove the effect of this fair value through P&L accounting, and put it into OCI for the period until the new insurance contract standard becomes effective. The designation of the assets is essentially what we proposed within the ED, but with one clarification, and that is that the assets could include surplus assets that the entity holds for the purpose of the regulatory requirements or internal capital objectives. So the assets which are designated are not purely assets that necessarily back the insurance liability itself, but could be surplus assets which are there for capital management purposes. The only real change to the ED is in terms of presentation. In the ED, we've proposed two alternative ways of presenting this overlay adjustment within the statement of comprehensive income Many people commented that allowing such a choice may be confusing, and therefore the board has decided to focus on one approach to that presentation, which is to present the line items in the profit and loss account on the basis of IFRS 9, but then have a single overlay adjustment, which is a separate line item in the statement of profit and loss, in order to remove the effects of this fair value through P&L accounting for these designated assets. That item will then be separately shown within the statement of movements in OCI. So essentially it's reconfirming what we had in the ED with some minor changes. There's been a slightly more major change, I guess, to the temporary exemption. So whilst the board has reconfirmed that an entity should be permitted a temporary exemption from applying IFRS 9 if it meets certain qualifying criteria, we have modified those qualifying criteria. So in the exposure draft, we said an entity would only be permitted to apply the temporary exemption if liabilities within the scope of IFRS 4 were predominant. So the majority, the significant amount of your liabilities would have to be within IFRS 4. And we gave the suggestion in the basis that something around 75% perhaps wouldn't be sufficient. So we were looking at a pretty high hurdle in terms of those IFRS 4 liabilities. Many people came back and said, well, simply focusing just on IFRS 4 liabilities won't really work appropriately. Many insurance entities where their activity is largely insurance will have investment contracts. Many entities will have liabilities which relate to insurance, maybe like derivatives, funding liabilities, which wouldn't be captured within this test. So they felt that the test wasn't really going to provide an adequate basis for identifying which entities should qualify for this temporary exemption. So we have modified it. What we've said now is that an entity's activities should be predominantly related to insurance, and such activities would include issuing contracts within the scope of IFRS 4, and IFRS 4 contracts should be significant compared with the total carrying amount of the liabilities. But related to insurance also includes issuing investment contracts which are measured at fair value through profit and loss by applying IAS 39. We also tentatively decided that the predominance ratio, this ratio that we had within the exposure draft, should be modified so that the numerator is the sum of the carrying amounts of liabilities arising from activities related to insurance, so the IFRS 4 and the investment contracts at fair value through P&L, but also it should include other liabilities which are connected to those activities. So, for example, funding liabilities, maybe deferred tax liabilities which relate to insurance activities. The denominator would then be the total carrying amount of all liabilities, and would essentially be the same as we had in the exposure draft. We then gave some numerical tests. As I said, this 75% was mentioned in the basis to the ED. Because of the change in the nature of the test, we've now said that if your predominance ratio is greater than 90%, we will presume that the entity is predominantly in insurance. If it's between 80 and 90, then an entity can still argue that it is predominantly insurance, as long as it can provide evidence that it does not have a significant activity that is unrelated to insurance. In other words, a banking activity or something, some commercial activity which is not related to insurance. If you're less than 80, then you would be out, so you wouldn't be able to apply the temporary exemption. So we've made it more numeric in the sense of bringing in these sort of these boundaries, but also widened the scope of the test so that it is more realistic, and in particular taking into account the feedback that we've received. We also looked at the disclosures. I won't go through the modifications that we made individually. You can read those in update. We did, however, particularly focus on the requests from investors and what they thought would be useful information. And one thing that we have added is a disclosure that would require an entity to refer to any IFRS 9 information in individual financial statements that's not provided in the consolidated financial statements but is publicly available. So if, for example, an entity providing this, using this temporary exemption, had a banking subsidiary and that subsidiary prepared IFRS 9 accounts, then the information that's available under IFRS 9 in the subsidiary's financial statements, to the extent publicly available, should then be used and referred to within the consolidated financial statements, even though in the consolidated financial statements the entity may have applied the temporary exemption because that banking activity wasn't deemed significant enough to mean that it was banned from using the temporary exemption. So that's where we've got to. We've still got a number of other issues to discuss related to this project. Our deliberations will hopefully be completed at the May meeting in a week or so's time, and then the plan will be to draft the final standard with an aim to issuing it in September 2016. And that's it for insurance and IFRS 9.
Thanks very much, Steve. I'll now pick up on some of the more important topics that the board also discussed in April. Firstly, the conceptual framework, where the board has been discussing the feedback to the exposure draft of the conceptual framework that we published in May of last year. And this month, the board discussed the purpose and status of the conceptual framework and the strategy for re-deliberations. The board also discussed some specific sections of the conceptual framework, those being measurement, reporting financial performance, and concepts for liabilities and equity. So firstly, in relation to the purpose and status of the conceptual framework, the board tentatively decided to confirm the proposal in the exposure draft that the purpose of the conceptual framework is to assist the board to develop IFRS standards based on consistent concepts, to assist preparers to develop consistent accounting policies when no IFRS standard applies to a particular transaction, or when a standard allows a choice of policy, and also to assist all parties to understand and interpret IFRS standards. The board also tentatively decided to retain the existing status of the conceptual framework and to confirm the proposal in the exposure draft to explain any departures from aspects of the framework in the basis for conclusions accompanying the standard in question. And finally, the board tentatively decided to confirm the proposal in the exposure draft that the conceptual framework should state that it may be revised from time to time. So in some sense, it's a living document. In terms of the overall approach to its re-deliberations, the board decided that it would re-deliberate those topics that have proved controversial or those for which new information has become available. On other topics, the board would confirm the proposals in the exposure draft but would not undertake significant analysis. So then, in relation to measurement, the board tentatively rejected the idea of publishing the conceptual framework without a chapter on measurement, and instead directed the staff to improve the discussion on measurement in light of responses received to the exposure draft. In relation to reporting financial performance, the board also tentatively decided to provide further guidance on reporting financial performance, and this guidance will be based on proposals in the exposure draft, but again modified in light of the feedback received on the exposure draft. And both these two topics are topics where we certainly received, I would think it's fair to say, a mixed feedback. And then finally, in relation to concepts for liabilities and equity, the board tentatively decided, and this is consistent with what the exposure draft said, not to develop concepts to address challenges that arise in classifying financial instruments with the characteristics of both liabilities and equities as part of this conceptual framework project. Instead, to continue to develop those concepts as part of the separate research project we have on financial instruments with the characteristics of equity. I'll make a few further comments on that subject in a moment. And it was also decided to explain this approach as part of the basis of conclusions. The board also tentatively decided to continue to develop concepts which address other problems in identifying liabilities as part of the conceptual framework project itself. So then, in relation to the financial instruments with characteristics of equity, the board continued its discussions of the potential separate presentation requirements for subclasses of liabilities and equity, and as in previous discussions, focused its deliberations on the so-called gamma approach. In this meeting, the board indicated that it would improve comparability to apply the separate presentation requirements to standalone and embedded derivatives that depend on the residual amount, whilst also noting that IFRS 9 permits entities to classify financial liabilities that include such embedded derivatives in their entirety as measured at fair value through profit or loss. The board also discussed the specific requirements for determining the amount to be attributed to classes of equity other than ordinary shares. The board considered a number of approaches but did not make any decisions in this meeting. And then finally, just a few words on goodwill and impairment. The board continued its discussions from the March meeting with a discussion about a possible modification to the impairment test to address investors' concerns about the late recognition of impairment losses as well as the overstatement of goodwill. No decisions were made in this meeting. In addition to that, and you can find more details in ISB update, there was discussions of business combinations and under common control, as well as various aspects of the disclosure initiative. And with that, I shall pass back to Kirstina.
Thank you very much, Hugh and Stephen. So the ISB update can be found on the IFRS Foundation's website, www.ifrs.org. And the next board meeting is scheduled for the week commencing the 16th of May. So until next time, thank you very much.